Morning, it's 11 minutes before 8 a.m. This is Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka. Today is Wednesday, March 5th, 2014. I'm Melissa Marconi-Wenzel with Raven News. Fire destroyed a building and over a million king and coho salmon eggs at Crystal Lake Hatchery on Midcoff Island, south of Petersburg, early Tuesday morning. The loss of eggs will impact hatchery releases around Petersburg, Wrangell, and Ketchikan a year from now. Joe Vicknicki reports.
Volunteer Fire Department spokesman Dave Berg says the call came in around 2:30 Tuesday morning. He says the department decided to send one truck to the site. It's almost 18 miles south of Petersburg.
When our truck got out there with our senior fire officers, they discovered that the building indeed was fully engulfed, and they went into defensive mode with hose lines off of the truck. They drafted water and were able to keep the sections of the building that contained fuel tanks cool, and so there was no spill to our knowledge, but the building is a total loss.
Berg says the fire department wanted to keep some engines and resources in town in case of another fire in Petersburg.
We certainly appreciate all of the volunteers who showed up, and hopefully the people understand the importance of keeping, you know, a crew and resources in town in case something happens. Here, we can't, in an area, especially with a long response time like it would be to 18 mile, it would be real difficult to put out a fire that had a good seat on it, and save a structure that was that far away. So we just glad no one was hurt.
The Assistant State Fire Marshal is in town this week on other business and is investigating the cause of the fire. No injuries were reported. Hatchery buildings are owned by the state of Alaska, but they're operated by the Southern Southeast Regional Aquaculture Association, or SARA, based in Ketchikan. It produces king and coho salmon. John Burke is the general manager with the regional nonprofit Hatchery Association. He says the incubation room burned down and fuel tanks and the generator room were also damaged in the blaze.
Well, basically the incubation room is the hatchery itself. So right now, the eggs in the hatchery are pretty well, or a good part of the eggs that were in the hatchery are pretty well destroyed this year. And those would include the chickaman stockfish that we take back to Neats Bay. And they would include some of the Andrews Creek fish that we were scheduled to release at City Creek there in Petersburg, as well as at Anita Bay. Now, these aren't this year's releases. They would be the releases in 2015.
Anita Bay is near Wrangell, while Neats Bay is between Wrangell and Ketchikan. Sarah's eggs were originally taken from the Chickaman River, that's near Ketchikan, and Andrews Creek, a tributary of the Stikine River near Wrangell. Burke estimates around 1.2 to 1.3 million eggs were lost in the fire and does not think it will be possible to replace them from another hatchery facility. He thought the loss to commercial fishing fleets could be valued over $1 million. Burke hopes that SARA can rebuild the incubation room.
It doesn't mean this is a good situation, but it would be trying to make the best out of what is a bad situation. So we would try to replace what's there. We will try to get it fixed either there or go somewhere else with eggs so that we can take eggs there this August when we normally would. We would like to keep the program going, and we think we can do that.
Some of the 2015 eggs had already been moved from the incubation building and escaped the fire. Those eggs lost Tuesday in the fire were gathered from other hatchery facilities around the region last summer, and that was after warm weather killed off a large portion of the returning Crystal Lake king salmon. In Petersburg, I'm Joe Vicknicki.
Two preeminent oceanographers will be in Sitka for the month of March. Jackie Grebmeyer and Lee Cooper will be catching up on their writing, visiting classrooms, and mingling with the public. Basically, enjoying the novelty of staying in one place for a solid month. The pair teach at the University of Maryland, but travel regularly to Alaska, where they did their doctoral research, to visit the Bering Sea and Arctic Ocean. Grebmeyer is a biological oceanographer. She's the U.S. delegate to the International Arctic Science Committee.
But I like to look at the coupling, connection between processes in the water column and animals that live in the underlying mud, particularly ones that then are fed upon by big animals like walruses, diving sea ducks, and also gray whales. So I like to look how the system works together like a big puzzle, and then what may perturb it or cause it to have some change in one way or the other.
Cooper is a chemical oceanographer. During his stay in Sitka, he'll give a presentation on radiation from the Fukushima disaster and other changes in the ocean that are of major concern. Like Grebmeier, Cooper also looks for connectivity in his work.
We have a program where we study certain productive communities along the way where gray whales, walruses, spectacled eiders feed, and we're looking at the organisms on the bottom and tracking the status of those communities because in some cases the numbers of animals and their how much they weigh has decreased, and so there's some concern about the system changing as sea ice tends to disappear, particularly in the Chukchi Sea as we're going into the Arctic Ocean proper, that the amount of sea ice is changing, and that's having some profound impacts on the biological communities.
Grebmeier and Cooper have worked out an interesting partnership in research and in life. They are married and have been for a long time. Grebmeier says she'll cook if Cooper washes the dishes. Cooper also does most of his work in the daytime, and Grebmeier takes the late shift on research cruises when the Coast Guard and other agency vessels they travel on are quieter. The couple is in Sitka on a fellowship, which is in its third year of funding from the National Science Foundation. The Sitka Sound Science Center's research director, Tori O'Connell, says the fellowships are good for the visiting scientists and build relationships that are important to her organization's mission.
Sitka has a lot to offer in terms of research and logistics support. You know, we have a hope that we're going to be a preeminent marine biology and terrestrial biology field station.
And O'Connell says there are long-term benefits for the community. She herself is a retired groundfish biologist with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. She believes the Scientist in Residence Fellowship can help steer kids in a good direction.
We learn a lot. We expose others to us, and then the students here get to see really what their future could hold if they keep on a science path.
For more information about the public schedule of events for Jackie Grebmeier and Lee Cooper during their Sitka residency in March, visit our website, kcaw.org. Alaska's bypass mail system took some punches in Congress yesterday. The chairman of the House Government Oversight Committee is renewing his attack on the postal system that delivers everything from lettuce to lumber in rural Alaska. As APRN's Liz Ruskin reports, Alaska's congressional delegation told him, essentially, to butt out.
Daryl Issa, who represents part of Southern California, has staged some high-profile fights in his committee, and he seemed to enjoy taking on his first two Alaska witnesses, Senator Mark Begich and Congressman Don Young. Issa is working on a bill he claims will reduce what the Postal Service loses on bypass mail, which last year hit $76 million.
The subsidy means that every 6 years, the American ratepayer is buying a bridge to nowhere.
Surely he knew those are fighting words to Young, who was champion of that Ketchikan project. But Young was plenty riled already. Young says bypass mail actually saves the Postal Service money, maybe $200 million, he claims, because shippers deliver goods in 1,000-pound lots directly to the airlines.
Bypass mail, people don't understand it. What it is, it's the products that we were going to ship parcel post don't go through the post office. That means you don't need to build more postal buildings. It means you don't have to hire any more people.
Young says the bypass mail system is working fine, and he accused ISA of meddling.
There's a $15 billion debt in the post office, and you're worried about $70 million that would have cost $200. I don't quite understand that. That's what you call picking up peanuts when you have a forest fire in your backyard. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
ISA also wants to allow three more carriers on the mainline routes for bypass mail out of Anchorage and Fairbanks. Competition on those routes is limited by a 2002 preference then-Senator Ted Stevens pushed through that gives most of the mail business to airlines that provide a certain level of passenger service. ISA says Stevens told him at the time he was trying to use bypass mail to subsidize passenger carriers. Young, in a testy exchange with ISA, insisted the limit makes economic sense.
Well, efficiency.
You can't efficiency be efficient if you don't haul passengers.
But it's all about passengers.
It's about efficiency.
But you know, Don, when I went,
have passengers, when I, you not have efficiency.
Begich told the chairman that carrier restrictions are also about safety. ISO wasn't buying it.
Are you saying that these other three carriers would not be safe to carry milk or vegetables or cans of Coke?
I'm saying the safety is part of the equation, but let me just say this.
What level of safety do you need for a can of Coke?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not going to go back and forth with you. Maybe you want to. I've seen how some of these hearings work.
Young, in a written statement to the committee, suggested ISA has been carrying water for a friend in the airline business. One airline that has fought to participate in the bypass mail program is Alaska Central Express. Ace Air Cargo is owned by the Donald R. Swartwood Trust. Mr. Swartwood is based in La Jolla, California, and is a frequent contributor to ISA's campaigns and his leadership PAC. A company executive testified today it would be cheaper if freight-only carriers were allowed to compete. In Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
And the House Finance Committee unanimously approved a bill allowing village public safety officers to carry a firearm while on duty. If passed, the program for sending the village officers through the Alaska State Troopers Academy in Sitka could begin as early as March 28th. The bill heads next to another House committee. And that's all for Raven News for this morning. It's 8 a.m. This is KCAW Sitka. You can listen to or read most Raven News stories again on our website, kcaw.org. To read comments on our stories on Facebook, click on the Facebook link. No registration or login is needed. And to have KCAW News headlines tweeted directly to your smartphone, tablet, or computer, click on the Twitter link. It's 21 degrees in downtown Sitka under fair skies. Today's forecast calls for sun throughout most of our listening region, except in Yakutat, where it should be mostly cloudy with some snow. Temperatures today in the upper 20s to low 30s. In Sitka and Port Alexander specifically, should be partly cloudy, becoming sunny early this morning. Highs around 29 and northeast winds 10 miles per hour. Just about 8:01 a.m., this is KCAW Sitka. Here's NPR.